This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. A great night. It's getting closer and closer and closer to football season. And right now, fans, we have with us, we have Bubba Rosenbaum is producing behind the scenes. He'll be with us in just a little bit. I think Kyle from LaGrange will do his normal. He'll come fashionably late. So that's just, he's like Kramer for our show. He'll just open up the door at any time. But we're with us right now, a dear friend of ours, and we're going to get him barbecue as soon as we can. I promise. Ryan Wallen from Owls Daily, the Temple 24/7 sports site. Ryan, man, great to have you back, and I'm so excited to see you. That means we're getting close to football season when I see your face.
Always a pleasure to be on here with you guys. I know countdown's on for Temple, 4 weeks away from today. Temple will be under the lights in Piscataway, New Jersey, taking on Rutgers.
That's crazy. I wanted to ask you, certainly, by the way, before we get started with the interview, folks, if you get a chance, I have to work for a living, believe it or not. But I want to give a shout-out to Bubba Rosenbaum, who was working really hard behind the scenes yesterday. We have a whole bunch of content. I'm having to go back now and listen to it and watch it. You can do it on our YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. But we have media days for the American, and they did Bubba did a nice job. And they did a nice job. I want to give a shout-out to the conference, Ryan. I thought they did a really good job with media days. It looked very professional. And I know, once again, with the pandemic, things are not the way that we want it to be, but when you look at it, it looked really, really good. What did you think?
I agree. You know, I thought that just the American unveiling their new TV studio, especially at their new headquarters down in Texas, I think it was a really good show, and especially considering that they weren't actually able to have an in-person event, they did an amazing job, you know, getting the representatives from all the teams, you know, their players, the coaches, to look really professional. And I think it helped, you know, having ESPN help broadcast, you know, that event. So it was a very successful media days. I felt like it was nice to have that again, considering last year they kind of went by the wayside. And this year, obviously, you know, once we have media days, we're only a stone's throw away from football season. So obviously very excited to get that underway.
I know for the Pirates, we'll get back to the media day in just a second. The Pirates opened up camp. Did you guys open up camp yesterday as well at the same time for football?
Yep. Actually, Rod Carey was on the bus on their way to camp. Yep. That was obviously the spectacle, I guess, of media days. Rod Carey doing his media day presser from the back of the charter bus on the way up to the Bronx. Actually, Temple will not be holding their camp this season on campus, I guess, because Rod Carey said simply he wants to just get away from the city, bond with the team, you know, where they're away from campus, they're away from the life of the city, go up to SUNY Maritime up in the Bronx, hold camp up there where they can really just bond together, be alone, away from all the drama, all the spectacles. And they're gonna do that. And they open camp today, actually. So, yep, they are in full swing.
Okay, yeah, I missed the first part of his interview, Ryan, and I didn't have a chance to go back and watch, but I was assuming that was the case as far as them leaving prep, leaving camp, or leaving town, I should say, to have camp elsewhere, kind of like Cincinnati. I think they've done that for years. I'm trying to remember the name of the place where they go, but I think it may actually be in rural Indiana, but They go somewhere just to get away and have camp without any distractions.
Yeah, and I think this is a first for Temple in some time. I know they used to do it way back in the day, but, you know, in recent memory, this is the first time Temple's doing that. And I think it's going to be good for them, especially coming off last year. You know, obviously Temple had a really bad year, but, you know, Rod – thinks that this is the year that they can actually bounce back. They have the talent to do so. They feel that this is their team. And not saying they're going to win the conference this year by any means, but I think they're going to be a lot more competitive, and you're going to see a resurgence back of the old Temple football, just from the attitudes, it seems, of the players and the coaches, and how they see that this 2021 campaign is going to go, barring any unforeseen forfeits or anything like that due to COVID injuries, whatnot.
How is COVID there in Pennsylvania, and as far as Philadelphia is concerned?
As far as Philly's concerned, I know I read a couple weeks ago that Philly was talking about starting to require masks indoors, even for vaccinated people. So not really sure where that stands right at the moment, but I know PA's going back to a lot of areas are starting to require masks inside again. Dave and I were talking before that, you know, schools are probably going to end up going back to masks. But the governor has said that he's not going to implement a mask mandate at this time. No clue yet what attendance restrictions could be in the next month as far as the season's concerned. But Rod did say that last time he was informed, more than 80% of his players are vaccinated. So that's a good sign as far as Temple's concerned, that hopefully that they won't be missing a lot of players due to COVID this year, unlike last year.
Yeah, Bubba can tell you that our most of East Carolina's staff and certainly a good number of the players are definitely vaccinated. So it's getting to the point where you're going to see employers, they're going to ask you to vaccinate. They're going to, I mean, pretty much everybody, because the only way we beat it is that most of the people that are in hospitals, I told you that 94% are not vaccinated. So it's hitting them. This new variant is no joke. The Delta variant is no joke. It's like, I don't know the bright analogy of this moment, but I can promise you that it's not something like before, where it's a slow, gradual thing. My understanding is this one, like, is a real knockout. So we could talk COVID-19, but we're going to talk football, because that's why you're here, Ryan. I know with the media days, this is an exciting time. I know Bubba and Kyle, myself, and I'm sure you, when we know we're getting closer to the season, we know that the countdown to kickoff is closer with the American Media Day, and then East Carolina's Media Day is coming up on the Saturday, the 21st. So we're, a couple weeks out, something like that. Yep. So what about you guys? Do you have a football Media Day coming up for Temple?
I believe they do have a media day coming up, but I'm not sure exactly what of the date. I know they're going to have Rod's going to be available on Monday to talk to reporters again. I hopefully longer, with less technical difficulties this time, not on the back of a bus. But they actually had some player availability today, since some of the players didn't get to speak yesterday due to the technical difficulties they were experiencing on the bus. So we heard from some of the players today for the first time since spring camp. We heard from Rod. We got some information on some injury updates. You know, they got their starting running back from last year, Tavon Rooley, back towards the end of the season after Ray Davis had left the program. And they got good news on Lansing Teray as well, a transfer defensive tackle from North Carolina. He's now back, who, after suffering a knee injury in the spring, he looks like he's going to be at least able to practice. We'll see how he'll be ready for the season or not. And then, but we did get information also that Zach Gill, again, still out, transfer from North Carolina, due to an injury he suffered in the spring. So we got some information there. Still not a whole lot as far as what we were able to see from practice, other than, you know, what we see on Twitter and what they post. But we knew going into camp already who the starting quarterback is. We have a pretty good idea of what the starting lineup's going to look like come that opener against Rutgers. So right now it's just seeing what happens between now and then, and hopefully nothing major happens, no injury-wise or COVID-wise, and other than that, they'll be ready to go.
No doubt. And it's exciting with this time of year. What about as far as the different positions? Is there something, area that maybe the strongest room, if you will, or is there one that obviously the other flip side of that will be what is your biggest concern? Like, what position on the football field?
Yeah, I think right now the strongest position group or the strongest room has to be the O-line. I actually did some research on that, and right now that Temple's projected starting five has a combined 114 starts at the D1 level. And I would have to venture to say that that's probably one of the most experienced offensive lines in the country coming into this season. No statistical evidence to back that part up, because I'm not looking through 130 different teams' offensive line units. That's going to be a lot of number crunching there. But, you know, they have a lot of veteran presence there, a lot of experience there, and they got some experience to back that up in case one of those guys would happen to go down with an injury or something, and in a couple transfer players. So that's probably the strongest area, I would say, obviously led by center CJ Perez, who's played for Cary at Northern Illinois and has played now at Temple last year, was their starting center last year, and I believe was one of only five players who played in all of seven of Temple's games last season. So good to have him there as an experience and as a leader of that position group. On the flip side, I would say the quarterback is what concerns me the most. Obviously, last year was a debacle with Temple at quarterback. Russo, when he went down with his injury, he's now since transferred to Michigan State. They had played a slew of other quarterbacks in there, and Real Mitchell, who ended up getting injured against, I believe it was Tulane, maybe, went down for the season. Then they played Kamal Gray in the season finale against you guys after it was supposed to be Matt Duncan, who, what I heard, got into some legal issues the night before the start. So that was a debacle itself. So needless to say, a lot of quarterbacks in the room, not a lot of proven talent there. And I forgot to mention Trad Beatty, who has since transferred to Georgia Tech after he initially announced he was retiring from competitive football this offseason, but now finds himself home with former Temple head coach Jeff Collins down at Georgia Tech. So the obviously getting a quality transfer like DeJuan Mathis, who was Georgia's starter at the beginning of last season, is great for Temple, but again, he's unproven. He made one career start at Georgia and didn't necessarily look great in that appearance, but as you saw, he did play a little bit later in the season towards the end of games, and he did look like he had calmed down a little bit. Looked more like a pocket passer, and that's why I assume he opted to transfer, is because he knew that he wasn't going to start at Georgia or play a whole lot unless an injury happened down there. So getting him, big gain, but we'll have to just see how that goes. So that would probably be the position that worries me the most, at least offensively. Defensively, I would probably say the defensive line. Temple lost a lot of guys along the D-line from last year's team. Chris Banks, Dan Archibong, Efine Maije, and I believe there was another one or two as well. And that was an area that, you know, Temple thought was a strong suit last year. They struggled mightily, and they've lost a lot of the experience there. So a lot of, again, unproven guys coming in or transfers that haven't played together. They need to see improvement there this year for them to be successful, especially defensively.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. And welcome him in. One of the guys we were talking about, ironically to you.
Hi.
With last year, Aaron Jarman.
Can I say anything?
What's that?
Do I get to say anything, or are you just going to welcome me in?
Yeah, I'm trying to lead you in. Hold on a second. Wait.
I don't need to lead in, baby. I am the lead.
This isn't a live show. This is a rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm trying to get to is there was the tight end, Aaron Jarman, that Kyle brought up to you, mentioned that we lost out to Temple, and now we got him this year.
Yeah. So,
Kyle, that was what I was leading that into you.
Yeah, the kid from North Lenoir right up the road here. Yeah. We didn't really lose him to Temple. Scotty Montgomery wasn't smart enough to offer him.
Well, you know what I mean.
Temple got him by default, but yeah, he's back home now. you guys had a lot of transfers transferring out from there. We talked about that last time you were on, Ryan. Things kind of, how is the atmosphere? You mentioned the quarterback room and all, but how is what is the mood around Temple football? Because towards the end of last year and then in the postseason, things just didn't seem to be copacetic.
Yeah, and I think it all depends on who you ask. If you ask a casual fan, there's some urgency, there's some fear, there's some anger there. But if you ask somebody on the team or the coaches, I don't think they would necessarily give you the same answer. I would say they think it's a more positive outlook. There, you mentioned the transfers, and obviously when you see the guys that were transferring, like an Arnold Ebiketie, a Jarman, Russo, Ray Davis, all these experienced, proven players who put up numbers for Temple, you get worried, especially because that's your older guys, and there's the one saying that, you know, it wasn't the right system for them, or they just didn't feel the coaching staff. So that's what you worry about. But you also see these younger guys sticking up for the coaches, and then there are these older guys that do stick up for the coaches saying, like, this is our school. We're going to rep this school no matter what. We're going to play for these coaches. We believe what the coach is building here. It's just a different style. We have to adapt. We're not going to bail on the team. And safety Amir Tyler, who's a senior, has said that. He's said, you know, that was part of the reason why he opted to come back this year and forego the transfer portal, is because he said he wanted to help rebuild Temple into a winning team again. He said you shouldn't just give up after one bad season. And they know full and well that last year was a bad year, but they believe that they have the talent that was better than the product they put on the field. And they know that they had a lot of circumstances going against them last year. Not to say other teams didn't, but due to the practice restrictions, some of their scholarship numbers as far as how many guys they were able to dress on a given week and how many they were able to practice – I know they were saying that they had like fifth, sixth string quarterbacks out there on the practice field running first team offense at times. So, I mean, that's something you just can't control, and that's hard to get into a rhythm, throughout a season, especially when it was a shortened season and, you know, you didn't know what was happening on a week-to-week basis. But like you said, there is some anxiety, I would say, and I would say that if Temple puts up another poor performance this season, there's probably going to be people calling for Carey's head. There already were last year, and last year I think everybody should have gotten a pass on. But I think at this point, I don't necessarily think Carey's on the hot seat after this season, but his coordinators would have to be. And then maybe after next year, if there's still not a lot of improvement, then I think you have to look at making a coaching change. But I can't say that what Carey's put out in one and a half seasons, if you look at the number of games from last year, I don't think it's been a bad product necessarily. Yes, there were very sloppy moments last year, but you forget he went 8-4 in the regular season in his first year taking over the team. And that was with a lot of players he didn't recruit. This is the year you're going to start seeing his recruits come in and playing a lot. This team, there should be no excuses for. It's his guys, his system, his coordinators, especially due to the number of transfers. It's a lot of his guys that they've went and gotten the portal to. So this is the make or break year, I think, especially for either the offense or the defense to really start showing some improvement. And like you said, I think the best way, though, that they've been able to forget about last year is the fact that there's not a lot of returning players from last year that can compare. You know, this isn't the same Temple team from 3-4 years ago, because there's not guys that were here 3-4 years ago. It's a very large overhaul of the roster.
Ryan, what I find interesting is if you look at his time at Northern Illinois, he was very successful. But their fans never really liked him.
I agree.
Without getting you in trouble, because I know you got to interview him, et cetera, is this personality, I mean, is he not a very likable guy?
I don't think – I've never gotten the impression that he's not likable. I think it's the fact that his personality is very – I would say it's very plain in that, and honest. Plain and honest is the best way to describe it. He's a straight shooter. He's going to tell you how it is, whether you like it or not. And I think people tend to not like coaches like that because they're straight shooters. If you win and yeah, win a lot, like a yeah. Nick Saban, I mean, people don't like Nick Saban either, but he wins.
Yeah, and, you got to win, or you got to be a straight shooter with some pizzazz. If you're going, you better get a few zingers off when you're shooting straight.
I think that's why Temple fans were okay with Jeff Collins. That even though he was a bit about the showmanship and the antics and, you know, the money down stuff and all that fun stuff, the Star Wars characters on the sideline, all that weird stuff, he was likable because he was very fun and outgoing, and he could sell you on stuff. He could have probably sold ice to an Eskimo. Kerry's not that type of guy. Kerry's a guy that's just going to tell you how it is. If he doesn't like something, he's going to get on your ass and do it. He's going to tell you it. And I think that's why some people don't necessarily like him. Now, I do think that the players, in terms of looking back to the Matt Rhule era, the Jeff Collins era, they saw that at least the coaches were willing to have more fun, I guess, in practice, maybe. Because Rhule, even though Rhule was a more serious guy and more like an old school Paterno type coach, he was a guy that was willing to go out and have them, you know, use pool noodles in practice as defenders. He brought in the Philadelphia Fire Department to do workouts with the team. He made practice fun. Kerry didn't necessarily do that in his first two seasons. I did just see on Twitter not long ago, earlier this evening actually, that Temple, the football team, was out on the beach, out doing workouts on the beach with boats and canoes. So I think that maybe seeing some of that nuance and that those new implementations might lighten the atmosphere a little bit and gain him some brownie points with the team. But again, if you're a person that's not, if you like to be sugar-coated and all, then maybe you would have liked a Jeff Collins better. But if you're more of a straight shooter, like an honest guy who's going to tell you how it is, then Gary's your guy.
I got an interesting question for you related to East Carolina. Bubby, you're going to need to help me out with this name if you're there. South Carolina's offensive coordinator. Bubby, you got his name?
Yeah, I got you, Kyle. Yeah, he came over from the Carolina Panthers to Bennett Temple with Matt Rhule, Marcus Satterfield.
Marcus Satterfield. What are your thoughts on him as a coach?
Marcus Satterfield, that's going back to the early Rhule days. So Satterfield, I always thought his offense wasn't as good as what Glenn Thomas's was when Glenn Thomas took over the job. And I believe Thomas took over the job in 2016, the year Temple won the American Conference. Satterfield really, I think, started the transition, and he knew how to work with P.J. Walker and, you know, that team that Temple had in the two, the what you would like to call the glory years of Temple football, 2015 and 16. But once Satterfield went to Tennessee Tech to be the head coach, I thought his teams looked really bad. So I'm not too sold on him. And I was quite honestly shocked when he got the South Carolina offensive coordinator job because I didn't think he was ready for it, I guess is the best way to put it. But, I mean, when you had guys at the caliber of a P.J. Walker, a Jahad Thomas, even though they were very low-recruited guys, under-recruited guys, however you want to put it, and they were low-star players, he made it work with them. So I think it all depends on the system you get in, but the SEC is a whole nother monster. And, you know, when he's going to have to go up against defenses like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, I mean, that's going to be a whole different monster. And I don't know if he's necessarily the guy that's going to turn South Carolina around either.
Man, they're going to And like I was saying, Ryan, with the South Carolina fans, they were like, oh my God, now we got to play Texas and Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully not. Hopefully that doesn't get pushed through faster than 2025.
Yeah, based on South Carolina's history, if it's 2025, the staff won't be there. Ryan, another thing I wanted to ask you about, you guys open up with Rutgers on Thursday night, September 2nd. Just like we also play that Thursday night against Appalachian State. South Florida plays that Thursday night against NC State, and I believe there's another game. I want to say there's one more game involving the American that night. How do you like opening up on Thursday night and with all those American teams opening on Thursday? Kind of the spotlight's going to be on the conference.
Well, first off, I love the fact that Temple gets a night game under the lights and primetime TV on the Big Ten Network against Rutgers. Yeah. It's a rivalry game. You know, there's a big recruiting rivalry between Rutgers and Temple. They're always competing for the same guys as far as recruiting's concerned. So that game's going to go a long way in recruiting purposes. It's going to go a long way, obviously, for the conference if Temple could pull off a win against Rutgers. You know, and people hear Rutgers and you think that...
Yeah, Shiano, baby, Shiano.
It's not a good team, but, you know, Shiano did show that he could turn them into at least a semi-competitive team last year.
They were night and day. The record really don't show it, but if you watch them play, they were night and day over how they have been the previous couple years.
Exactly, and, you know, Shiano obviously was the one that turned them around in the first place back in the 2000s, so... You know, this is going to be a big game to see, A, how Temple's going to come out and perform under this new system, but B, Rod Carey's very good against Big Ten teams, especially, well, dating back to his time at Northern. I believe he was either 4-0, he might have been undefeated against Big Ten teams, but I know he picked up a big win against Northwestern against a Big Ten. I think he beat Illinois a time or two. So he's very good against Big Ten opponents, so we'll see how that's going to play out. But I think that Thursday night under the lights, prime time, can't ask for something better. And just as the conference as a whole, you know, ECU opening up against a top 25 team from last year in App State. App State's always, you know, the prime of the
season. Oh, UCF Boise State. That's the one we forgot.
That's a prime time game right there.
Yep.
That's the best game of the slate. You know, obviously Boise's the premier team of the Mountain West. You have UCF, who's a front runner in the American. So you'd like to see UCF hopefully get that win right off the bat and say that, hey, one of our best is better than one of your best. And that should automatically give the American the New Year's Six berth just based off of that.
Hey, Ryan, what do you think about the whole conference? I was talking about Texas and Oklahoma. What do you think about the fact of this mess now I'm hearing about with the Pac-12 and the Big 12 talking? Because that makes absolutely no sense. West Virginia having to go all the way out to Stanford. I mean, it just makes no absolute. I mean, if the West Virginia fans, they have a great program. If West Virginia fans didn't like the Big 12, what makes you think that they're going to like a combined, even if it's a schedule alliance, going all the way out to Stanford or out the West Coast? That's crazy.
Hey, or better yet, Dave, you imagine some of those Pac-12 teams going to Morgantown.
Yeah, nice, Bubba, nice, exactly. Hey,
you know they would love a burning couch and some of the local happenings there in Morgantown.
Yeah, culture shock, right, guys? Either way, it'd be a major culture shock. But what are your thoughts on conference realignment? And what about the American? Do you think I know that Bubba posted, and once again, I got to give you a tip my hat to you, Bubba, the great job with covering the media days, obviously for the American. I know there was something, Bubba, that when I was going to say coach, Commissioner Resco was asked about it, and he's saying that, like, in other words, they didn't go after all those eight teams, but I'm surprised.
Well, they should. They should. I hope he's lying. I hope he's lying. I hope he's lying to save face because he should have been going after all eight teams. And, this is one time where I hope the commissioner is being dishonest to try to save face. What he should have said is, hell yeah, I went all after all eight teams because this is about survival. So it's okay. And I didn't mean to cut you off, Ryan,
no, but
it's okay if the Big 12 comes and raids the American. Nobody bats an eye. It's okay if the Pac-12 raids the American. It's okay if the SEC raids the Big 12. But God forbid a so-called group of five tries to better their league. Then they're in collusion with ESPN. It's a bunch thing. Of bullcrap.
Bob Bowlesby is dead on arrival. I'm sorry, Commissioner. You're terrible because you've allowed all this stuff to go on. You knew what's going on. And now you're going at, why would you go after ESPN? It just shows you're desperate because
the only commissioner worse than Bowlesby is the one at CUSA, Judy. Their commissioner's name is Judy. That's all you need to know.
Wow. I think the conference realignment in total, by creating this power, this super league in the SEC, is bad for college football. But the way I look at it, it's interesting because, you know, you have two powerhouses or namestays in Texas and Oklahoma going to this league. Say the playoff expansion happens and it does go to 12 teams. Are they really going to be getting that many more teams in the playoff than what they already have? They already pretty much guarantee themselves two playoff spots every year in the SEC. I mean, historically, it's been either two or one SEC team. I don't know if that's going to earn them a third team or what, but I don't necessarily think we've seen how Oklahoma's played in the playoff.
Yeah, they
can't win. Yep. And Texas has not been at the top tier that it used to be in the mid-2000s and, you know, since then. So I don't know if it's necessarily that great of a move, especially when they're going to be playing better competition now. Are they really even going to be the powerhouses still? So I see it that way, but I think it's bad for college football in the business standpoint that it's taking away from the lower schools. It's taking away the G5's chance at any relevancy. It's taking away their chance at the playoff. It's limiting their chance.
I think if the playoff expansion happens and we go to 12, if that does happen, Ryan, I think group of five is more relevant than ever.
I think my thing is if it depends, I think what happens with the AAC and the Big 12 is if that does combine, then obviously you're one of the power four now, really. So you would assume you get automatically two bids. But if the American gets raided and it's forced to combine with, say, the Sun Belt or the MAC or however that's going to play out, I don't know.
Pick from the Sun Belt and American.
Yeah, I would.
Or Sun Belt and the USA, I'm sorry.
I'd prefer the Sun Belt.
I think there's teams in both. I mean, I think, I look at expansion candidates if we lose three or four teams. You certainly look Marshall. I think Florida Atlantic is very attractive.
What about App State?
I think App State Coastal.
App State's very attractive. I think Arkansas State's attractive. As an East Carolina fan, we're gonna want look if all this crap happens, and we're gonna have to be stuck in a doo doo league. Then we're gonna want our buddy Southern Miss in the doo doo league with us.
You want the best doo doo league possible.
Exactly.
Hey Ryan, Kyle, Bubba, something I've heard that makes me very angry. So I was really excited initially about the 12 team thing, but I'm hearing a different media outlets, including ESPN Radio and Sirius XM, they're talking about the reason why there's expansion now. Get this, guys. Is not to help us out, which of course they won't not even one team. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to take the conference, the highest champions. Maybe we get one there, but guess what they're going to do? They're going to pack the playoff. They're going to put like six SEC teams in there. That's ridiculous.
That doesn't help. That doesn't hurt the group of five. It that hurts everybody. If you have your six highest rated conference champions, then you're going to obviously have one group of five team in there, right? So
I was saying,
of course that's the idea, Dave. That's the idea is you take Alabama and Oklahoma, and then when they expand to 12, and you got six at larges, they hope to at least get three or four of them. And I think it's possible, but at some point, you know, some of these commissioners, I made this point over and over again, not commissioners, I'm sorry. Some of these conference presidents and chancellors, school presidents and chancellors, I'll get it right in a minute. Some of these school chancellors and presidents from the group of five need to grow some balls. And say, look, we're going to sue. This breaks antitrust laws. You're creating a monopoly,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have access to the playoffs, just like we didn't have true access to the BCS bowls. Yet we're all supposed to be Division One. The whole term Power Five creates a monopoly, in my opinion. Now, if I'm the ACC and I'm the Big Ten and I'm the Pac-12, et cetera, I want to sue the SEC for creating a monopoly and an unfair advantage in the marketplace. I think some people, instead of the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12, you know, the Big 12 is running through the Pac-12 because they want to keep their spot. They don't want to be associated with the American. Maybe it's time you associate with the American,
yep.
and the Mountain West and everybody else and say, look, because I'll tell you what, as you've been excluding us, ACC, and Pac-12 and Big Ten and even the Big Ten, but we'll leave the Big Ten out for a minute. We'll say Pac-12, ACC, and Big 12. As you've been happy to exclude Conference USA and the American and the Sun Belt, it don't feel too good when you're about to be excluded, does it, Big 12? Why don't you come work with us? And yep. Before the SEC leaves you all behind, because I told, what was I telling the gentleman from the SEC the other night, and he didn't deny it. I think the ultimate goal is to create two 20-team leagues. I think the SEC wants to have 20, and they want their friends in the Big Ten to have 20 by raiding the Pac-12 and have 40 teams, yep. basically an NFL model, and they're going to break away. I think that is the goal, is to have an NFL-type model with 40 teams, two conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. The SEC, you know, next step will be to add Clemson and Florida State, which puts them at 18.
Wait a minute on that one. That's not possible. And let me tell you why that's not possible. People, Joe Giglio from Raleigh, WRAL, do you know what the buyout is for Florida State and Clemson to leave?
Anything's possible, Dave.
Dude, $390 million each. They're not going to – yeah, but that's not going to happen.
Well, when does the media rights deal in for the ACC?
2036.
2036?
They're scheduling them 2036 games.
It's like 15 years. Swofford did that with ESPN. Yeah,
they have their media deal lasts through 2036.
Something like that. Yes, it's definitely in the 30s, 2030 something. Yes, it's ridiculous. But that's
if that's the case, then that's great. That's the longest media deal I've ever heard in my life.
Well, no, I didn't say I agree with it. I'm just telling you it's ridiculously long.
Well, that's smart.
And guess what about all those people talking about Notre Dame going to the Big Ten? The ACC has it in the contract there that if the Notre Dame goes to another contract, they owe the ACC conference, they owe the ACC something like $150 million. Now, I know Notre Dame has a lot of money. But why would you pay $150 million to join the Big Ten? I know about money, but that would take a long time to recover from that. So for a lot of people out there saying that the ACC – I'm not saying the ACC is going to get Notre Dame. All I'm saying is Notre Dame is more likely going to stay at independent as long as they can, because $150 million to the Big Ten to pay the ACC to go to the Big Ten is a lot of cash.
Yeah, I still think that's the SEC's goal. I agree with you on the idea.
I'm just saying that the Clemson Florida State thing, unless they can come up with money, unless they have great lawyers to reduce $390 million, any amount, any reduction is still going to be a lot of cash, in my opinion.
I've never heard anything like that. $390 million and then a 15-year duration. I mean, that's incredible. That's incredibly smart by Swofford. If he got that done.
Yeah, that's what I'm going by. I mean, Joe Giglio is there in the triangle. He's really close to your favorite conference, ACC.
Yeah, that's your favorite. Ryan, with the talk of media rights deals and all, let's just play pretend. let's say we merged the 10 all sports members in the American merged with the 8 members of the Big 12 for an 18 team Super League. How much money would it take for you as a Temple alumnus and writer? How much money would it take for you to sign a media rights deal? Excuse me, not to sign a media rights deal. To sign a what's the word I'm looking for, guys? A grant of rights to sign a grant of rights. Like, you know, how much money would it, of a TV deal per school would it take for you to feel comfortable with Temple signing a grant of rights for 10 years to the American, meaning you can't go to another conference such as the ACC without paying a $100 million buyout?
Like 20 million?
I would want it to be pretty nice because, I mean, I think the goal of if you do create that Super League is that you hope that league is going to last. It's not going to be raided again, obviously, especially if you imagine the SEC is going to get – if they do try to get to 20, if the Big Ten tries to get to 20, or even if they try to get to 18, say they get to 18 – and you have 3 18 team super leagues and say the ACC even gets to 18. At that point, I feel like you think that the Pac-12 is mostly dissolved at that point and they have to combine with the Mountain West or whatever's left there, or they grab the Mountain West and they merge there. So I think at that point you have to look at what – I don't know if you have to worry about it being that much. Yeah. Because do you really want these other conferences really want to – add more teams after that? I think at that point you don't need to worry about it as much. So, you know, 25, 30 mil, maybe. I don't know if you have to really worry about it. Like I said, but if the SEC's goal is to eventually become like the NFL, maybe the SEC just tries to break off by itself, like your situation. Yeah. If they try to merge with the Big Ten or at least get a scheduling agreement with the Big Ten, like you were talking about with like the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are discussing, what if that happens? Then you get some real interesting monopoly type legal stuff that's going to happen. And I think at that point you probably do get the lawsuits. Cause at that point it's like the NCAA is just there. It's a money grab and that's all it is. And it's a money grab for the SEC and the Big Ten. And I think we've already seen that's what it's about right now. It's not about quality of football because the SEC doesn't need to add Texas and Oklahoma. They have a market in Texas already. They have a market across the country. It's about expanding that, getting better TV deals in the long run, and making sure that their conference is going to be the one that gets the most money at the end of the day and hopefully brings home the national title every year.
Ryan, before we let you go, how can people follow you on, obviously, on Twitter, social media, and look forward to having you down? We'll get you some barbecue, I promise, that early November.
All right. Yep, you can follow me on Twitter at RyanWallen247. Names in the display. You can follow us at OwlsDaily247 on Twitter, at TempleOwlsDaily on Twitter as well. That's my editor, Sean Pastor. And then temple.247sports.com is the website, or OwlsDaily.com.
All right, Ryan, as always, buddy, appreciate it. Good luck to the Owls this year, and always enjoy the visit with you, my friend.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, have a good night, man.
Thank you.
Very much. All right, bye-bye. All right, with us right now, let's bring in Jeff Allen, Night Sports Line Network. How are you, my friend? Good to see you, as always. And also the AAC reports. Glad to have you on tonight.
Hey, it's great to be here once again, and glad to be on board.
Thanks for your patience tonight. Obviously, wanted to have you on. A lot of crazy stuff we want to have you on. Obviously, the media days, first off, I want to get your comments on that, and I want to also talk conference realignment. Let's start off with the good stuff, with the media days. How did you feel about that overall with the American?
Yeah, you know, and I heard you guys talking about it with Ryan, you know, the conversation starter, if you will, of Mike Oresko vehemently denying that there was a situation afoot to try to raid the Big 12. And just think, you know, ESPN manipulating and trying to govern college football. That's a shocker, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, come on. It is good to see that, you know, that we're in that conversation and we're getting some of those headlines. I think there's more to that story that we just haven't heard yet. That's for sure.
No question about it. Jeff, what's funny is how Kyle was alluding to that earlier, how the Big 12 now, we knew it was coming, didn't we? Didn't we know that in 2011, I mean, there's only a matter of time that Texas and Oklahoma are not going to be part of the league. And they saw the handwriting on the wall that their TV deal was not going to be what they needed it to be. You have the issue with the Longhorn Network. They've been losing money to ESPN for a long time on that. That's, I think, going away, right? So the only hope that they have as far as making the kind of money that Texas and Oklahoma think they need to make is to do what they did. They did what they had to do for themselves. But as far as the league is concerned, don't you think that there, even though it's going to hurt the league, there's a lot of people like Oklahoma State, for example, TCU. There are guys out there that are saying these guys have been like doing whatever they want in our conference. They haven't really looked out for our conference anyway for a number of years. This is a chance where I was told what I've been hearing on media and different things is that Oklahoma State has been promised like for Oresco, hey, here's your chance to be the top dog. You were always in the shadows of Oklahoma and Texas. You could be our top brand if you're in the American. You can TCU. I know it was a Conference USA mate with East Carolina. They've really climbed up the ladder. But I don't, you know, when I'll never forget in 2016 when our former AD was pushing really hard for the Big 12. I said, guys, we have a great league in the American. We have a way better commissioner, and that's proven to be true. He's done an excellent job. I don't get paid by Mike Oresco, but I think he's one of the best, if not the best, in the business. And it's funny now how people think it's a doubt, like they're going down. But the Big 12, I think, has not been strong for a number of years. If you look at the American top to bottom, a lot of great teams, a lot of great coaches, programs, you know, you got great cities. I mean, we could go on and on, but there's a lot to be said for the American.
Yeah. And, you know, the American to me is far superior to the Pac-12. Why would the Big Ten even think about that? I mean, that's absolutely insane. But yeah, to go to that point, that's a great point you make about, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, getting a chance to be a marquee team in the league. That certainly would work out. And, you know, and it's also, you look at the brilliance of, you know, when the breakoff from the Big East happened, naming the conference the American, they didn't tie themselves into a region.
Right.
And they didn't tie themselves into a number of teams. And so, you know, that banner could definitely be used no matter who they managed to wrangle into the conference.
You think, what's another thing I was telling Bubba and Kyle, I don't know if I've said this on the air, if I have, I don't know what I've said on the air and off the air, but anyway, isn't it ironic with they moved the offices to Texas? I know they said there's a lot of teams closer to Texas, and I understand Rhode Island is not where all the teams are. That was more a fit for the Big East, so to speak, but it's just kind of ironic, and maybe it's coincidental, that you move the offices to Texas and then you have all these teams in the Big 12 that are right around there. I don't know, but it just seemed, maybe sometimes things fall in your lap and you don't understand why, but it just seems, it's kind of eerie for me when I heard that the two things I thought about is a great point that I haven't made. And you did about them naming the conference, the American. The other one was about that very fact of the offices in what is it, Irving, Texas?
Irving, yeah.
Yeah, Dallas, Fort Worth area.
Yeah, and they're like right around the block from the college football playoff offices.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course the commissioner Oresco said he didn't know, but I got a feeling he might have been fibbing a little bit there too.
I mean, how does he, that man is so bright. Come on. I mean, he's a smart guy, a smart dude as far as as we were talking to Ryan Wallen, I don't think that the Pac-12 and the Big 12 are a good fit at all. And I'll tell you why. Number one, no disrespect to the schools in the Big 12, but the Pac-12 has this like elitist mentality about academics. I think if you go to a lot of schools, their classes are very hard, depending on what classes you take. But college classes are not always as easy as people make it out to be. And these schools, a lot of times, that like they thumb their nose down to East Carolina's of the world. I'm not so sure about UCF, but we get that all the time. And let me tell you something. I went to East Carolina. It is not easy. It's not like underwater basket weaving and all these classes. But the Pac-12 has that kind of mentality, just like the Big Ten and somewhat the ACC. The Big 12 and the Pac-12 culturally are not anywhere close to each other on academics. Obviously, geography, that doesn't matter anymore. But I just don't see how that's going to be a good fit. And as far as the geography, meaning the number of miles from Morgantown, West Virginia, to Pullman, to Stanford, you know, like all those schools, and also the whole academic thing, if they tried to merge and be a super conference.
Yeah, and how do you think West Virginia feels about why did we go to the Big 12 again?
Well, you know, the sad thing is a lot of people said the ACC. I'm telling you right now, I've known for a long time, I have nothing against West Virginia. As a matter of fact, East Carolina and West Virginia have a kind of a rivalry. We have a lot of good bowl games and we like playing them. We like that game. I have nothing against West Virginia, but the ACC does not want them. And for all the people, the media, do your homework and understand that they don't think the ACC, not me, not David, the ACC doesn't think that West Virginia is good enough in the league, but they pick Louisville. So,
yeah. And West Virginia might well end up in the AAC, right?
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, we'll take West Virginia. We have nothing against West Virginia. Yeah. And they've got a great fan base. They got a great football program. The great basketball program with Coach Huggins. I mean, we'll definitely take them. There's nothing wrong with, by the way, there'll be an interesting baseball rivalry there. You had the former coach from East Carolina, Randy Mazie, and his wife, Amanda, went to East Carolina. They would be coming, you know, they'd be playing in Greenville, and we'd be going to Morgantown. So there's a lot of good things about West Virginia coming, in my opinion, too, there. And then you look at the other schools, like I was talking about. You look at with Oklahoma State, you look at TCU, Texas Tech, Baylor. There's a lot of great teams in there that I would like to have in the American. I'll be straight up.
And flip in basketball, Kansas.
Oh yeah. My goodness. That would be
that'd definitely be a nice jewel to have in the American for sure.
Yeah,
Kansas will be joining UConn in the Big East just as fast as they can.
Oh my God, that would be terrible.
And flip this for a second, you know, with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, did somebody remember to tell them that they play a little more defense in the SEC than they do in the Big 12? I don't think Oklahoma's going to be scoring 45 a game.
Hey, Texas fans out there, if you thought that it was bad in the mediocre years that you've had recently, just imagine being 3-9, 4-8, 2-10 in SEC. It's possible, but I'm not, again, I have nothing for Texas one way or the other, but it's totally possible that they could be having a lot of losing seasons back to back to back.
Oh, I definitely think that's going to happen.
Jeff, I as Kyle from LaGrange, I've been having some internet issues, so coming and going. The obviously with the Big 12 stuff, the first thought, you know, you're hearing all kinds of stuff. The Big 12 Pac 12 thing's not going to happen. If the Pac 12 wanted some Big 12 schools, they would just take them. So they're basically just amusing Bob Bowlesby. What's going to end up happening at the end of the day, and you know as well as I do, either the two leagues, meaning the American and the Big 12, are going to merge, or the Big 12 is going to take some schools from the American. What is the attitude down there at UCF now? Because at one point it would have been, oh yeah, you get a chance to go to the Big 12, go. But you know the rumors are now without Oklahoma, Texas, that the television contract might not be worth much more than the Americans is now. I guess if you take some premier teams from the American, if the Big 12, if those eight stayed together and they took UCF, Memphis, Cincinnati, we'll say Houston,
Take all maybe, the big TV markets, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you could get up to, you know, 15 million with the TV deal, 16, 17 million, pushing that 20 million that they were at now. Is there a lot of interest in UCF going to the Big 12 if they stay together? Or would you guys rather, or do you think most of your fan base in the university would rather see a merger?
I would say the fan base is looking at the Americans should be the linchpin in this and not the Big 12. It's more attractive right now today to be in the American than it would be to go to the Big 12.
Hey, Kyle, and another thing, too, is that the reason why Texas and Oklahoma left, they were even talking about adding they even put the numbers to Nate Jeff with they were looking at ESPN and say, what if we add, you know, teams from the American, and the contract as far as the media rights deal, from my understanding, what they didn't. In other words, taking no disrespect to UCF, Memphis, anywhere, but in other words, it's not going to save the league. And when Texas and Oklahoma saw that, they saw the handwriting on the wall, and that's why this whole thing to the SEC is going, because even if you add teams.
Well, then to me, what needs to happen, if I'm the American, you know, once they get past the stuff with the Pac-12, there's still going to be a try from the Big 12 to get some teams away from the American. Well, we need a gentleman's agreement right now from all the American teams, all these presidents, from Cincinnati's president to East Carolina's president to UCS president, need to get together and say we're holding pat. We're staying together. And then you need to get in the ear of one team from the Big 12, i.e. West Virginia, and you need to get them to say yes. If you get one to say yes, it's over.
Well, interesting you mentioned that, because I think the very first question that the commissioner took was, okay, what are you guys doing strategically to avoid from being poached with all this going on? And the commissioner has already said, yeah, they've had discussions. I think he's very well on board trying to get everybody to buy off on having that unified message to stick together and wait for that dust to settle and then aim for the Big 12 teams.
Yeah, I would be in favor of a merger. I would be, you know, I don't know where Navy as a football-only member in Wichita State fall, but if you took the 10 all-sports members of the American – and then there's 8 members of the Big 12, if all 8 remain, that's an 18-team league. You can make that work. You could do 2 9-team divisions. That's for football, 8, let's say 8 division games, 1 crossover game, and 3 non-conference games. You can make that work. I that's what I would really – I'd shoot for a merger. And then if they don't want to play ball, then start poaching.
Yeah. And I think either outcome – works for the American. So
yes,
I think you're spot on there.
Yeah. And by the way, Kyle, I heard Jeff, I don't know if you guys heard, I heard that when you take away Oklahoma and Texas, it's about right now at 10 million a school, and we're what, 7? I mean, it's only like a few million dollars more. So
I've heard as low as 9, and I've heard as high as 15. So probably 10 would be a good middle ground.
So I was like, that tells me that if we're like 7-8 million in that range, right, guys, then
yeah.
Then Texas and Oklahoma, that was their conference. They're gone. Pretty much the conference is over, and they're just dying a slow death. And so you can bow out gracefully, or it seems like Bob Bowlesby, he's going to be like the last dude, and he's going to be the last person left of the Big 12. He gets to kill
the light switch.
You know what? If it's that important for Bowlesby, for the Big 12 to survive, I mean, I'm okay with the 10 of us all going together and joining, emerging and using the Big 12 name. And to me, it still has some sex appeal.
Oh, you wouldn't call it what about the Big 20?
That's ridiculous. I think at some point these Big 12 schools are hopefully going to realize where they are. And again, the one I would be talking to the most is West Virginia, because they've got to be unhappy with this whole situation. And I really don't think they've been happy in the Big 12. I think it's been a have-to situation.
Yeah. And of course now, you know, if you rename them, they would be the Little Eight.
No question. And we'll get to, obviously, you came on to talk about the Knights and UCF here in just a second. Obviously, we will get to that in just a second. But have you heard one more question about realignment? We'll move on to UCF. And Bubba, I know, is ready to jump on and talk about the Knights. What about as far as, have you heard a timetable? I haven't heard any kind of timetable on maybe we would know some kind of decision on this, because it's almost like a male soap opera. Now with this realignment,
it could go on for another 2025, Dave. Technically, it could go.
That's true.
It's going to get decided before 2025, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes on a good year.
Oh yeah, no, it'll be talked about for quite a long time until we're blue in the face about it. Because it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen quickly. You may be looking at a year and a half before. You know, before the rubber really hits the road on that.
You know, my one fear with the Big 12, you know, how important is it for ESPN to get this thing done with the SEC? And my one fear, does the ESPN cave and bail the Big 12 out and say, all right, if you add four or five teams from the American, we'll go ahead and put you back at 20 million just so we can go ahead and get moving with Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC.
Yeah, that could be a possibility, but I don't know they're going to be earning a lot of money with the SEC. I guess they could have them be paying the bills for them. I guess
that's
like a minor league. Hey, let's talk. I know Bubba, you want to talk some UCF football, right?
Yeah, shifting gears, Jeff. Obviously, expectations are very high for Gus Malzahn and staff on first year there in Orlando. Vegas has set the over-under for wins at 9.5. What's your take on things, and what do you think of Coach Malzahn's remarks at media day?
Yeah, I really just like that he is coaching with his hair on fire. That is about the best way I could put it. And he is generating a ton of excitement here. That is, frankly, it's fresh and it was needed. Josh Heupel, as much as he did good, the last season was not a good one for him. And I think they were a little stuck in the mud. And, have a guy of Gus Malzahn's credibility be available to UCF in a big time of need when the coach and AD left, is certainly tremendous. He's bringing in some great transfers. He's put together a coaching staff that is very committed to recruiting here in the state of Florida, which Josh Heupel kind of failed at, essentially. The excitement level is off the charts here, and the expectations are back for better or for worse, as far as the fan base wanting the team to be the conference champion again.
And obviously everything's going through Luke Fickell and Cincinnati, right? But you guys, I know that we've talked about it before with you on the air and off the air, with the very fact that I think that you guys made a killer hire. I don't know what in the world. I know Kyle was the first to talk about it with us, with Auburn. I don't know what they were thinking, but they had a great coach. And you guys got a great gift, my friend, there in Orlando.
Yeah, that's what Auburn does. You know, their booster situation. They ran Terry Bowden out of town. And Terry Bowden did good things at Auburn. So it's, they tire of their football coaches for whatever reason. I don't know if they acquiesce enough to the boosters' wishes or whatever, but their losses are gain. I think they've hired a great up and coming coach in Brian Harsin, but as long as Nick Saban is not retired, Auburn's going to be second fiddle for a very long time there.
And no doubt about it. It's going to be interesting to see. And you know what I love about our league, Jeff, is the very fact top to bottom. You look at the coaches, you look at I mean, we have some of the best coaches. I know you could argue the SEC, but what other conference outside the SEC that you can say from the top of the league with Cincinnati all the way down that we have tremendous coaches in the league?
Yeah, I mean, that's very well stated. I mean, you know, and I mean, I'm still surprised that Luke Fickell is still at Cincinnati, to be quite honest with you. But hey, great for them, because he's a hell of a football coach. You know, you look at what Scott will eventually do at South Florida. You know, you guys were talking with about Rod Carey at Temple. He came into a difficult situation and made that a competitive team. Coaching wise, this league is in tremendous shape.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're obviously running out of time. We have a few more minutes with you. I know that you have somewhere else you need to be, but we'll have you definitely back, to be fair, to run down. But what's your overall thoughts on the team? And the next time we have you, when you get closer to the season, we'll have you back on so we can break down the team even more. I apologize for late with you tonight, but we'll definitely have you back. But overall, what are your general thoughts about the team? And we'll let you go.
Oh, no problem at all. You know, you think about UCF, you think about Dylan Gabriel, quarterback that's, thrown for over 7,000 yards, 61 touchdowns to just 11 interceptions in his 2 years. He did run the ball a little bit more last year, and it'll be interesting to see, Gus Malzahn's good with quarterbacks. So this will be a good opportunity for him to develop and learn some new things there. Offense wasn't the problem at UCF, and it won't be a problem this year. They did lose two of their key elements in the backfield and Otis Anderson and Greg McRae to graduation. Ventavious Thompson, who was going to be thought to be the lead back, is no longer on the roster. We have not heard a reason why, but that just happened this week. They have a couple of fleet backs in Demarius Good, Johnny Richardson, and they've got some transfers in for former Auburn running back Mark Anthony Richards. Northwestern transfer Isaiah Bowser, and then RJ Harvey comes back home. He's an Orlando native, so it'll be a new running attack. They've got Trey Nixon and Jacob Harris and Marlon Williams have all moved on. Jalen Robinson, Jay Flash is a tremendous deep threat. He had 55 catches, almost 1,000 yards, and Brian O'Keefe, who should come on now that he'll get more playing time. Offensively, they're good. They got all five starters back on the offensive line. Offensive line was a little bit of an issue last year, but I think now they've they're going to go into more of a different scheme, if you will. They like the run pass option plays, zone running game. Having continuity is a big step in the right direction as far as that goes. So offensively would be a problem. Defensively, this is where the team needs to improve.
Yeah, Jeff, it's going to be very interesting and intriguing just to see this offense. I totally agree that, no doubt the Knights will be explosive, but how they go about doing it with Gus Malzahn having done it different ways in his time, and he said point blank that he's more hands-on now as OC.
Yeah, and it won't be the run a play every 8 seconds like Josh Heupel did, but I still expect to see quite a bit of up-tempo because they do that well, and they've got the players to do that, so. But I think having a little more of a power running game is going to be a big help. I know Josh Heupel had a tendency to get away from the run too quickly, in my opinion. So I think this will be good to have the running game be more a factor on the offense.
No question about it. It's going to be fun. Can we get you back in a couple weeks so we can really dive into UCF some more?
Yeah, absolutely. We could definitely do that. I'll just say quickly on defense, Big Cat Bryant, transfer from Auburn, is going to be counted on to be our guy that gets to the quarterback, returning with Tre'Mon Morris-Brash. And, you know, where they will have to grow up quickly. You know, they've got a good linebacking core. This is in the secondary. We've got guys now, you know, Richie Grant's moved on to the NFL, and a couple other starters. So, there will be a lot of eyes on the defense. We could definitely break that down in further detail for you on another visit.
That will be awesome. We always enjoy having you on. You're a wealth of knowledge, Jeff. We appreciate you so much. And as always, for fans that don't know, tell them about the podcast. And obviously, I know the AAC report, but also I know you're part of the big network.
The Nightline Sports Network, we have several shows on there, and I do the AAC report each and every week. We just started our team by team previews this week. So it's that time of year. So it's always fun to start licking our chops and getting ready to talk about the upcoming season. Most recent show, Kelly Hines of the Tulsa World was on to talk about the Golden Hurricane. And we had Frank Murtaugh from the Memphis Flyer on to talk about the Tigers. And of course we'll continue that throughout the coming weeks. And then Jeff Allen Sports Talk is my other podcast that I do. Most recently had Tim Brando back on the show, and we talked Timmy a lot B. about Timmy B's he's the best. And we had a tremendous conversation about UCF and the American Athletic Conference. So those are my two shows, and you can follow me on Twitter at @JeffAllen_88 as well.
All right. Look forward to having you back on. So we'll do it in a couple weeks. And in the meantime, get some rest, because you know the season is going to be crazy like it was last year, my friend.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, guys. We'll talk soon.
All right. Have a good night. All right. Take care. All right. Jeff Allen there, and very excited to have him on. He's always so good to us. And we wanted to do a brief roundtable. No bubble. We got some time. Lots of stuff going on. And believe it or not, folks, in the summertime, there is stuff that's going on. In fact, if you're a sports fan, you can't stop doing a show. It's year-round. So just to let you know, want to talk, obviously, one of the things, Bubba, we can start off, I guess, let's talk about season tickets. Season tickets, 1-800-DOWL-ECU, or you can go to ecpirates.com. And, Bubba, we're trying to get, I know, hopefully, 14,000, 15,000. 15 would be, I guess, very, very optimistic, but maybe we can have a late push right here in a few weeks.
Yeah, we obviously want to sell as many as we can sell. The number we've consistently heard is 14,000 as of 5 p.m. on Wednesday, August 4th. 12,340 was the number that was released by ECU Athletics on Twitter. And they put out a graphic saying, you know, Pirate Nation. And I believe this actually said, help us reach 13,000. Let's not settle for 13,000. Let's sell as many as we can sell. And then as far as App State tickets, all tickets are now being sold by the Charlotte Sports Foundation. So you'll have to go through their link or give them a call. Plenty of tickets remain. We sold between 4,000 and 4,500 through the East Carolina ticket office. And then I'd heard App State had sold between 8,000 and 8,500 at least through their office. So that means that at least based on what we have been hearing, then at least 17,000 or 18,000 thereabouts have been sold through the CSF, the Charlotte Sports Foundation. So hopefully we'll get up there in excess of 40,000. Still 4 weeks to go. 4 weeks from today, actually, we'll be about halftime at Bank of America Stadium. Hopefully, with things going well for the Pirates in a tough opener against the Mountaineers. But that's the update on the season ticket front as well as the App State ticket front.
Yeah, and that's something that I have my season tickets, but Bubba's going to kill me. I haven't got my tickets yet for the game in Charlotte. I'm trying really hard to work it out schedule-wise and some other stuff. It's not that I'm
putting you got a hotel book, but no tickets.
Well, I was trying to do that because I can cancel that. The problem I have is dealing with, will I have that day off? So I'm worried about buying the tickets and not getting the day off. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. As far as very excited about camp starting, Bubba, I know if you and I could, we would be right there covering it. Unfortunately, we can't, but it was started yesterday. I know, very optimistic Mike Houston, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Coach Houston, he just really emphasizes the depth on this team, as well as the way this roster has been transformed physically, as well as mentally. Because when he took over, the ingredients to win, not only physically but just as far as practice habits, as we've talked about ad nauseum, et cetera, we're nowhere near what they need to be in terms of accountability and responsibility. But it's getting there for sure. It's trending in the right direction. I know he's very excited, as well as the staff. You got a full complement of 85 scholarship players now, whereas 72 were available back in 2019. So that's obviously a huge difference.
Wow.
And then even though you got so many guys on that defensive line, as well as other places, but especially defensive front, that are freshmen and sophomores, and they got a lot of experience last year, but fortunately it didn't show up in terms of eligibility with the rule changes. So those guys that are freshmen, most of them, saw 8 or 9 games of action last year. And you look a guy like Rick D'Abreu. Last year he played on the inside, was a little bit undersized to play defensive tackle, but he wreaked some havoc. And with the production he had last year on the inside, he would not be moving to a defensive end like it appears he will be doing, based on different reports. If Coach Houston and Roy Tesh and the staff did not feel good about what we have on the defensive line. So that's a great sign to me that, we're looking at playing Rick D'Abreu on the end.
I'm very excited about it. I tell you what, whereas some other schools that D-line and in particular, but that was an issue for us. And depth in overall is much, much better. We're in a much better place in every way, thank goodness, going into the 2021 season. Hey, Bubba, very excited about – I know that we don't have a lot of time, so we're trying to skip along to different topics, as many – a long way to go and a short time to get there. Very excited to see you had breaking news. We had a commit for basketball. Very excited that for Joe Dooley and company.
Yeah, Brandon Johnson of Brunswick Community College, one of the previous signees, unfortunately, is coming up a class shy, so we were looking for another 6'8 or 6'9 addition, and Brandon Johnson of Brunswick Community College is it. It came down to us and Old Dominion. Obviously, Old Dominion has been very good in recent years, even a top 25 program, so a big recruiting coup for Joe Dooley and staff. I really like what I've seen. I hadn't seen a ton of film, but what I have seen, there is one of his complete games. I believe it was maybe the JUCO tournament that's on YouTube, and I will share that on our social media so folks can watch and develop their own opinion of Brandon.
Very excited about that. In fact, I'll have to check that out. I just learned of him tonight, so I can't wait to check him out. Hey, Bubba, very excited about Burley moving to AAA. I know that we had that on social media. Good job, as always, on social media, my friend. We try to put up stuff as soon as we find out, and very excited for him. And there's no question with his numbers, he was eventually going from double to triple A.
Yeah, Burley's been knocking the cover off the ball this year. He had homered 4 times and, it was probably right around 300, give or take, in high A ball, moved up to double A in Springfield with the Cardinals, hit 14 home runs there, again, right around 300. And, his first 2 games in AAA with the Memphis Redbirds. What a way to make his debut for them, having a hit in each of his first 2 games for the Redbirds, and they're at the DBAP. So tonight is game 3 of their 6-game set with the Bulls. And my family and I will be headed down Sunday. I think it's a 5:05 first pitch, but we'll check out Burley. And who knows, maybe we'll get to see Sean Armstrong, who's pitching for the Durham Bulls, and he recently got traded from the Orioles to the Rays. So he moved over from AAA Norfolk. He was pitching for the Tides after starting the year in the big leagues. He is moving over
to the Durham Bulls, and hopefully he'll get back up to Tampa here before the year's out.
That'll be great. We think a lot of him, and good luck to him to get back to the show for sure. Want to remind everybody, we have Bubba again. I want to give you kudos. I know that you work very hard. I couldn't help you out, so being at work yesterday, but the AAC Media Days, we've got a lot of videos. We have a lot of content, don't we, my friend?
Absolutely. Sorry, I couldn't unmute myself there. Okay. I was in the middle of typing something, but
I saw that.
yeah, no doubt. All 11 coaches, as well as Commissioner Makaresco, just go to YouTube, search Sports Objective, and you'll be able to find it.
No doubt. Appreciate that very much. We have Aresco, and like you said, the coaches, players for the Americans. So you can go back, and there's a lot of stuff on. By the way, fans, don't forget, our good friends, to subscribe to our YouTube channel, all the great stuff on social media. Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
Just call 1-800-ECU or ECUPirates.com and get your season tickets.
That sounds good to me. That's a great way to wrap up our show. Thanks to Ryan Wallen tonight. Al's 24/7 Sports, our good friend Jeff Allen from the Nightline, Night Sports Line Network. I always wanted the old ABC show, Nightline. I always want to call him his show that. But anyway, thanks to Jeff Allen, Ryan Wallen, two good friends. Appreciate Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum. Until next time, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates!
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!